Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And it's 2020 in review. So.
Oh, I was about to say, no, it's not. It's 2021. I've made the same mistake a couple times.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. It is 2021. So we're going to take a look back this week at 2020 and kind of what happened and what a horrible year it was. I mean, some interesting things happened, but I think they would have had a bigger impact in other years. You know, I think it would have they would have done better. So is there anything that jumps out right away for you about 2020?
2020? Yeah. Everything kind of blends together for me. I'm actually not honestly sure what year it is.
Lockdowns and quarantines and the rushed vaccine.
Yeah. Meaningless lockdowns for us. Yeah.
Right. Well, the thing that, or one of the things that was unique is we got some interesting properties getting their own series on streaming. So both The Witcher and Tales from the Loop.
Oh, right.
Yeah, got at least one season of a television show on streaming. So Tales from the Loop on Amazon and Witcher on Netflix.
Which explains why I haven't watched Tales from the Loop.
Right. Yeah, I liked Tales from the Loop a lot. It caught me off guard because the it's just kind of inspired by the art. It's not really taking directly from anything in the game as much. Because it's really indistinct about setting and time that it exists in. It exists in this kind of timeless place. And it's episodic. But everything's connected. So all the characters are sharing the same thing, and that what they do, you know, kind of gives you more clues about what's going on in the world.
Interesting.
And it's done really well. It kind of early on had a feeling like a Twilight Zone feeling, but then when everything was connected, you were like, oh, wow, okay. Yeah, it plays with time better than The Witcher does. Okay.
I didn't get to the episodes in The Witcher.
Yeah, so yeah, what was your verdict? Oh, I think we talked about that. Your verdict
on
The Witcher.
Like, knew nothing about the game or the franchise other than people talk about it a lot, and it was a video game and a set of books. And I didn't get to the start part where they started playing with time, because, I don't know, it just didn't really hook me.
Yeah, yeah.
So much. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I'm curious. And if it gets a second season, I think I'll go back and watch the first and give it kind of a second, you know, second opinion because I was a little bit, it was disorienting. It was done well. I mean, I think it was some of the CG was really bad.
I didn't get to that.
Yeah, there's some really bad dragons and stuff in there. Yeah. So Netflix doesn't have unlimited budget. It has within reason budgets, I guess. But a couple of the game systems that came out, I think, correct me if I'm wrong about any of this stuff, but Ironsworn, was that a 2020 release?
I couldn't tell you. That's when I picked it up.
Right.
So for us,
we talked about it this year. Yeah. Right. So at least Delve was. I think Ironsword Delve was definitely in 2020. And so that was very interesting to release a core rule set for free as a PDF. And the hard copy, of course, you had to buy. But to be able to see a full, complete rule set that you were able to solo completely free.
And not like an artless version or a scaled down version. It's like, nope. Really nicely designed, really nicely laid out. What you got in the PDF was exactly what was in the hardback.
Right. And something potentially over-designed was the Mjölkborg
release.
Yeah. A lot of illustrations. So have you talked to anybody that's played it? Are you familiar with the rule set or anybody?
I am not. I mentioned before, I got a chance to look at the physical book, and it's gorgeous, and as someone who used to do pre-press, like spot varnish and like metallic plates and all that stuff, because and that brilliant yellow, this looks fantastic.
Nice.
No idea what this is like. Right. And jumping ahead a little bit, I think I'm getting a little burned out on the world is shit. Everything's shit. Let's kind of be gray, amoral characters. Right. And
we're doing that enough in our personal lives.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. I don't know, like,
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see if things turn, if we get a turn into the more
A lot of stuff is coming out from Mjölkborg.
Yes.
That seems pretty cool. And this other kind of, not exactly open license, but the company or the designers saying, yep, here's this thing that you can kind of do whatever you want with and brand it as, you know, being used with Mjölkborg. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
That might be fueling why I feel kind of burnt out on the, look at more of this Grimdark stuff that's kind of coming out, but Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm curious about the support for that game, and I'd like to play it. I've got a copy of it coming. So eventually we'll get around to that. A miniatures game that showed up in 2020 that kind of came and went and had a plan to release like regular factions was Warcaster, the Privateer Press kind of sci-fi.
Did that disappear then?
Well, it's around. I mean, I think they kept doing Kickstarters, but I haven't heard anybody talking about it. I haven't seen people advertising it. Yeah, so it exists, but I'm not sure what kind of an impact it made.
Do you think it's one of those things where because no one in our group is interested in it, we don't actually seek it out?
Oh, yeah.
For that decade I was out of Magic, I was like, doesn't exist. Right. It doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, it's still around. People play it.
But I think especially miniatures games, based on like local game shops, like what they support, how they help discovery and how they help nurture tournaments and play. I think, certain games get wildly popular that nobody is really paying attention to. So online is not a great indication because it's kind of this generic kind of melding of interests.
We're also in a country where space is a premium.
Mm.
And a couple times when I was still into like War Machine and Hordes, like trying to find a place to play,
right.
pre-pandemic, like even at the store was like, this was like a tiny ass little table, and it's nowhere near what it was like back in the States when I like worked for GW, when they had like five, huge tables going, and the amount of, I guess, community that fostered. It's really hard to do that with limited space like you have in Japan. And I imagine it's even, maybe more or less difficult depending on what you're doing, trying to do it in like an online space.
Yes, right. No, I think that's true. Hey, remember when I was going to go to Gen Con this year?
Yeah.
Well, that got canceled along with everything else. I mean, literally just, it was like a domino effect. And as soon as some of the big ones went, then nobody else was.
Japan, take notice.
Yeah, right.
Cancel stuff.
Yeah, I'm surprised. There's stuff that I could have gone to, like art shows things. Yeah, I was really surprised. And there's people that kind of opened, because a lot of those kind of convention spaces or whatever in Japan have the big loading doors, big cargo doors. Mm. They'll just leave those open in January weather and like, we're complying with whatever kind of safety measures.
Air changing.
Right.
Which I do understand. I also wonder, doesn't it just spread stuff?
It does. It just kind of moves stuff where it wouldn't have been. Yes. So we also saw this past year, the Dead Milkmen release a D&D module.
Right. Yeah.
So I've got a digital copy of that coming as well. So, and some excellent gelatinous cube dice that are the larger scale dice. So they can serve as a miniature or a D6.
How big a D6 are we talking?
They're big. They're like 28 mil, size.
Right.
Yeah. They're huge because you can play them on your miniature map, or you could roll them. So that was the one thing I couldn't resist. Everything else is like, I could take it digitally. That's fine. But that's like,
gelatinous cube dice.
No, that's a great idea. And HeroQuest returned.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actually going to be produced, but we'll see.
It hit its funding goal, right?
Yes, it did. It did pretty quick, yeah.
I don't know what, if anything, the Hasbro-specific platform has in way of like liability or stuff like that, the way Kickstarter does. But it hit that funding goal, so I would think they have to produce it.
And I think maybe just people are careful about private crowdfunding. Like they have accounts and things already with Kickstarter or whatever. So they're more comfortable supporting things. So it was a little slow, like surprisingly slow to hit their goal.
Really?
On their side. It took like half of the, maybe like a couple of weeks, whereas I would have expected like 24 hours or 10 minutes or whatever that the Kickstarters usually brag.
I am surprised about that. Yeah, because I would have also assumed it would have gone in like 24 hours.
So that was interesting. There was a funny thing that the HasLab recently did. So, of course, they have the properties for Star Wars and Transformers and G.I. Joe and all that good stuff. So they're doing like, adult kids, very special releases of things for very big prices. So they did the Mandalorian's ship, which I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
I know Boba Fett's.
Right.
I don't know the Mandalorian.
Yeah. It's a
Sorry, go ahead.
But they produced a pretty expensive. They raised like $2 or $3 million, and produced a nice deluxe version of this that probably fits the little action figures. And then in the next episode that was released on Disney Plus, the ship was, spoilers, the ship was destroyed. And so all the fans are like, wait, what? How did I just put down my $200 whatever and you just destroyed my?
Well, you know what?
That was good timing.
That was good timing. I also bet Hasbro probably didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, the ship exists, for how many episodes it's there, right? And if you're going to put down $200 on a big piece of plastic like that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a one surprising thing, how good that production of The Mandalorian has been about hiding their surprises.
Oh,
they've
really?
Had some big surprises, big cameos in season two, and they kept them all quiet. They kind of snuck up on everybody. And I think it might have been a real chore to get that done because there's so many, you know,
right,
production
right.
assistants and stuff who would love to get the clicks or the likes to leak some of that stuff. But especially even with like the Baby Yoda character from season one.
Which I am not at all sick of.
They could have merchandised the hell out of that early on and, you know, kind of spoiled it, but they didn't. They held on until, so they kind of lost money that Christmas. So
also, do you know Disney's, what, taken down a bunch of the...
Yeah.
Baby Yoda memes and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They went after. Yeah. Because anybody that was trying to, like, even like in the maker community, try to do, you know, 3D models or any sort of crafts or accessories featuring that character, any search for Baby Yoda doesn't yield anything anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like baby alien.
You know, no, they do. Yeah. That's that's what a lot of the STL sites are, just like a little baby alien. Yeah. Yeah. But there was a miniature. A miniature company that did kind of parody Mandalorian, and it was goblins. It was like orc version and the goblin baby.
Okay.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it worked. And I think we saw also the release of the Quest RPG.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that. So that's an odd... Yeah, it's an odd
I still
move.
Haven't looked at that
mm-hmm.
because shipping to Japan is...
Yeah.
Generally ridiculous,
right?
And I think when I went to the website when it first came out, like they were like already sold out
mm-hmm.
and waiting for a reprint, so I kind of sat on that. And it's one of those games where I'm interested, don't know if I would have time to actually play,
right? Yeah, I'm kind of like, yeah, kind of just academically interested in it as well, just to see what they're trying to do that's different, or yeah, how they're kind of spelling things out. Yeah, so I don't know, but we just recently talked about them, you know, giving away free copies for schools
right.
and also doing the tutorial, the audio tutorials. So they're trying to get people to learn the system and have access to it. So
I remember it being described as like really learner friendly mm-hmm. or like the layout of the book. And that's also kind of why I was interested in it. But man, my focus kind of seems to wander.
Right. And we got a new version of Cyberpunk Red, and the CD Projekt Red game was released to horrible bugs and crashes, and it crashed on consoles.
Yep.
So that was pretty amazing.
And did you see the recent video where some director is like, and tossed their QA team under the bus? Where
Nice. Yeah. We can't take responsibility. Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, they did a heck of a job though supporting The Witcher with DLC it had a very long lifespan.
I mean, the video game.
Yeah, the video game, The Witcher 3. So it'll be interesting to see if that same studio like does the same and kind of brings it back, like kind of resurrects the playability and kind of the respect that people originally had that they kind of threw.
Yeah, I'm kind of like I said before, I'm interested in the tabletop RPG, which is Cyberpunk Red.
Mm-hmm.
Not $40 interested, though.
Right, right.
So...
Well, there may be a sale eventually.
Oh,
the digital version might get cheap around sometime. But yeah, we'll see. Also...
Oh, this is going to be a good one.
The year of not Dune.
Oh. Basically. Yeah.
So I think we're talking in January. Wow, there's going to be so much Dune this year.
Yeah. I think you branded it as the year of Dune. So, yeah, it's the year of not Dune. Yeah.
Yeah. So we totally missed out. Yeah. And there's a controversy with the movie. So Warner Brothers was going to release it simultaneous, or maybe only streaming, or at least simultaneous theatrical and streaming. Hmm. The director and a lot of people are just like, that's going to kill it. There's no way that's guaranteed. It's never going to have a sequel. It's guaranteeing it's never going to make its money back. Like, don't do
okay,
that.
Okay. You know? I get. I guess I understand that. On the other hand, when are people going to be able to go back to the theater?
Yeah, we don't
and
know.
And them, what are they going to do? What's Warner Brothers going to do? Sit on the movie until the pandemic is over and people can go back to the theater?
Yeah, they're sitting. They've scheduled things again. Like they've rescheduled things again, and it's basically just changed the zero in 2020 to a one, and it's all happening in the fall. You know, now it's like all November, December 2021.
Mm-hmm. I think we talked about it a little bit, and I might be jumping ahead. I think I saw something about The Green Knight getting a release date.
Oh, nice.
But maybe I'm wrong, because we talked about that as a game.
Right,
and I think the review I read of the game wasn't that glowing.
Yeah.
But I might be butchering stuff. I think it's because the person who reviewed the game wasn't looking at it in terms of like a one shot.
Oh.
Because like that's what the game seems to be. Yeah, it's like you play these different characters and there's kind of a set path you go along and you're only playing it for like one session.
Right.
And I think they maybe kind of missed the point of that. But.
Yeah, I think that's interesting when people go in with really wildly different expectations and then give things bad reviews because you don't get experience in this game. How would you ever advance your character? It's like
you don't.
That's the system. Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, Dune lost so much momentum. That really is sad because they had so much stuff lined up. The re-release of the board game, the 2D20 RPG.
Are those still coming out?
Yeah, it is still coming out. This spring, I think they're going to be shipping things. They're doing things a little bit weird. Like they had limited edition covers on the books that they're doing an Amazon exclusive,
A
local game store exclusive, and then a Modiphius web store exclusive. So we'll see. I like the art. The system works. We'll see. I reread the first novel again, and I'm in the middle of Dune Messiah, and realizing it was just a play test, so there wasn't everything in there. Right. But there's a lot in that universe that would make it more interesting and more playable as an RPG. That I don't think people are thinking about. If they're thinking about the first movie and just the first, or even just who's the director?
Herbert? Lynch.
Or just the David Lynch movie. That seems like, well, that's not going to make much of an RPG, but the universe does kind of like really start to spread out, really start to, there's more diverse worlds and face-changing assassins and, all sorts of things that really start to.
That would make a traditional party, though.
No, I mean, it's creating like more clash with the factions and giving you kind of more villains and more intrigue, I think. I think it's helping make it a little more complicated, like whose side are you on or who's working against you.
Well, I do remember, it's been a while since I read the book and I kind of stopped reading it about halfway through to start reading Gideon the Ninth, which is a lot better or a little more, I don't know, interesting. But I remember there was a part where Duke Leto sends a bunch of Atreides troops covertly to Gedi Prime to like blow up those spice storehouses.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's like just like a sentence in the book, and you're like, that could be a scenario, right?
I kind of agree
that even within that thing, there's more to the universe and more that could go on. I don't know. Really cool on Star Wars, but I don't really think I need to see a Dune extended universe.
His son is
already kind of doing. Working
hard on that, or just like filling in every possible gap, prequel novels and things. What was the war against the machines like, anyhow?
That was actually kind of mildly interesting. Yeah.
But everybody's done that. Yeah, but So we'll see. We'll see what's going to actually happen with these releases and when the movie finally comes out. And yeah, everyone's going to be so much older if they go back and do press again for that. It's like, are you even in this movie?
No, Arrakis is a harsh land. That's why everyone looks a lot older now. Yeah, that's right. From the Lynch movie, I forgot how young the Paul character is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like seeing the previous, I'm like, whoa, what the fuck? Oh, right, he's a teenager.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so yeah, I was all set to enjoy total Dune immersion.
You had those cinnamon drinks ready to like start imbibing some spice, and you're like,
no. Yeah, it just didn't happen. Another weird thing that happened last year in the middle of a pandemic was the release of 9th edition Warhammer 40K. And their numbers, their financials are amazing for 2020. Okay. They did really, really well. Even though they were shut down, the online store was shut down for most of the time. There was a huge delay on shipping. They said we could only ship what we have in warehouses, so lots of stuff is selling out. We're not producing anything. And then they, on top of all that, then like, oh, and here's 9th edition.
Right. Interesting. I hadn't looked at their numbers, but
yeah,
GW has a really loyal fan base, and
people
got to be well off to.
Yeah. And people
talk about hobby,
they just spent their COVID checks on new armies, basically.
I'm sorry. What stimulus check are you thinking of? Even that $2,000 one wouldn't even get you a Warhammer army. It'd be like, okay, I got my 500 points ready to go. Oh, I need 2,000, right? Oh, this is not dollars? Right, okay. Yeah.
But the one disappointing thing, especially that I ran into, is Japanese prices are garbage. They're second the second most inflated to maybe Australia, and I think Australia gets hit the most with like ridiculously overpriced stuff from GW. And so I did a local or an online an online retailer. They didn't get it's not a starter box, but the kind of celebration box, the Indomitus box for 9th edition. They didn't get that until 6 months after the original release. So they basically screwed, you know, all of the small guys and local probably brick and mortar stores.
You wonder why they're doing.
Exactly right. Yeah. So their financials, you know, their people paid for that. Like businesses that probably went under, hobby shops that probably disappeared. So GW could sell retail as opposed to wholesale to the hobby shops. And so that was really a lot of people. And that's what happened. I guess that's what always happens during pandemics. But people show their hands. You see how greedy certain companies are. You see how power hungry politicians are. Like all of that stuff kind of starts to show pretty easily when people get those kind of opportunities. And so GW showed themselves to not really care about,
like, those annual price hikes didn't.
That kind of that had me suspicious, but
you can set your watch by those damn things. Oh, is it the next year already?
But you know, they do make nice minis. That's the thing that sucks the most. Is although I'll have to say, I didn't do an unboxing for that set. I was just like, it's 6 months ago. It's like, I don't want to do the late to the party, But they're push fit, that box, which they've been doing. But they're also doing now pegs on the bases. So the bases have holes in them, like hex-shaped holes for pegs.
Oh, and the pegs are hexagonal.
Right. And so it's kind of weird. So you can't reuse the bases. Like, those bases are only for that set.
Right.
You don't have extra bases. You're not going to have a lot of flexibility. I mean, you can cut that post off and do whatever. But it really has, like, you know, so that's a very intentional position on the base. And it's a monopose model. Like, there's a lot of, like, the creativity and the kind of the fun of making it your own. Like, you can paint it any color you want. But other than that,
I think that's GW probably trying to strike a balance between appealing to hobbyers, hobbyists and gamers.
Yeah.
Because there are those kind of two distinct schools. People just kind of want to play and people who want to actually, like, model stuff. And obviously people just want to play, just kind of want to get their stuff together fairly quickly and play. And like I said, when I was working at GW, more than once, which is not at all that much, but having to explain to new people who would come in, no, these are model kits, right? Because we would have little miniature tables set up and we had to demo things basically to anyone and everyone who came in.
Right.
And the number of people who came in saying, is this the EA games or whatever? Is this the video game thing? And the response had to be, no, let me show you what games they are, right? But actually making a couple sales. But anyway, the number of people or parents who went, oh, you actually have to build these things and they don't come like this. And we're like, yeah. So I understand trying to make that more accessible for people who just want to put it together. You know?
Yeah. And even in their boxed games, they're doing like different colored plastics and stuff. Yeah. So it's push fit and it's green versus red. So, hey, we're ready to go.
Yeah.
That's true. But yeah, it was a bit of a disappointment. And I think 9th edition,
we're going to lose a GW sponsorship.
Yeah, we're about a million subscribers away from that. The other thing that was kind of disappointing is I think legally they went after Battlescribe, who is the kind of most popular list builder app, and they released their own app. And it was garbage and it didn't work. And then they wanted a subscription for it right away when it didn't even work. And it didn't include an army builder. Now the army builder is working. They gave everybody kind of a beta month to play with it. And it still sucks. There's still things missing. And the other happy surprise was you pay monthly, like $5 or whatever a month. And you still have to buy the codex, the physical codex, put in a code and it unlocks the books you buy in your app. So it's like they don't give you. So there are no digital rules now, basically. Like they're really, the digital rules are within the app. They're not going to allow people to, like, you know, pirate PDFs or, you know, mobile. That's a very that was a very odd move. I thought the app was. I can't believe they couldn't get their head around that, and they saw exactly what people have already done that works, and they half-assed it. So. Anyhow, that's not even pandemic related. That's just incompetence. Just bad management. And Alan Dean Foster had quite a year.
Yeah.
So Disney stopped paying him.
Did that ever get resolved?
I haven't heard. I heard the Dragonlance suit was settled.
Oh, the
D&D. For an undisclosed amount. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Which we didn't hear. Suspect, mm-hmm. or someone suspects, mm-hmm. is Hasbro trying to get rid of all the extraneous stuff attached to D&D
so they can
sell it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I haven't heard any more about that. I've just heard what if GW bought them? So people are all because that would be another funny, that would maybe even be funnier than Paizo, because GW went from producing D&D support materials to then owning D&D.
I wonder what that would end up looking like.
I don't know. Yeah. It would be interesting because they have trouble. I think there's too much going on in the world of D&D and the settings and things for them to handle it well. And they might just kind of kill stuff to make it more manageable. Kill.
Somebody loves D&D. I don't care. But I was wondering, because 4th edition was such a miniatures heavy mm-hmm. grid-based game. I could see them doing something similar.
Forcing that back in.
They're a miniatures company. Oof. If they bought D&D, why wouldn't they say, hey, miniatures?
Yeah, their miniatures would be excellent, but I don't think the system...
The rules would be garbage.
Yeah, you're right. The rules, would be unnecessary garbage. Yeah. That's weird, but then they could go back to elves and dwarves and not have to do all this.
No, they wouldn't. We'd see Drukharian, Eldarian, Oryx, or whatever the hell they're called in D&D. Which would then spawn a second Splinter Company.
Right. We're using the original names now. Yeah.
Yeah, the Alan Dean Foster thing, like we said before, I kind of can't believe, I can, but don't know how anyone could support the idea that buying an entire company absolves you from whatever debt that company has incurred at the time you've bought it, such as paying the royalties to writers.
Yeah. And that's, I hope that gets handled, that gets settled, and they pay him
the correct
back.
Way. Yeah, because that's like huge precedent. Being like,
And that means everything that Disney buys from now on is going to go unpaid.
It's
going to
be everything.
Yeah, it's going to just be unpaid. Yeah, but the other funny 2020 Alan Dean Foster thing was so everybody had their own idea for Star Wars Episode 9, which became The Rise of Skywalker.
Okay, which I've not seen.
Yeah, so they everyone had their idea for what that should be. There was originally the Colin Trevorrow script, which didn't get handled. There was this weird J.J. Abrams rewrite.
Which I'm sure was nothing but lens flares.
Yeah, and lens flares and retcon. Yeah, basically, but Alan Dean Foster wrote his own treatment of what he thought should happen based on, kind of logically thinking his experience with writing for Star Wars and what would happen. And in that, Rey was an android. That's why she was so good with the Force. She just kind of automatically.
Sorry, that.
I don't.
I don't. Not a Star Wars fan. I'm really kind of just soured on that whole franchise. I don't understand how being an android means you're good with the Force.
Hey, maybe
do androids have 2 times the midichlorians that a normal person does or whatever?
I think she could just download. Yeah, I'm not sure like how logically he got to that, but I think he was trying to solve that complaint that she was hyper competent. Yeah.
So why? Sorry, why even acknowledge that complaint? Just you're a bunch of whiny babies. Yes. How about you STFU? She's doing exactly the same thing that Luke did, and you had no problem with it.
No problem. Yeah. Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, so that's funny. Yeah. Yeah. So, he had quite a year not getting paid and not being listened to with any ideas. But I thought that was funny that he kind of kicked in. There were a few people that read through his treatment, on YouTube and stuff, to just kind of, paint that picture. But so that was interesting. And the thing that won't go away, the stupid joke, besides the pandemic, it's very similar to the pandemic. So we had news about this early in 2020, and we just got another update about it. Again, the KFC console is still a thing.
I'm sorry, what?
So they released another press statement, a press release, that the KFC console is now being produced in cooperation with PC manufacturer Cooler Master. And so that means it's a PC. It's not a game console.
Well, really, what? What is a game console other than a dedicated PC that runs games? I don't have a console, but based on what consoles now do, I think there's very little distinction between PC.
Oh, that's
and
true.
Console.
I mean, they've got the motherboards and I guess maybe Sony is a little bit different architecturally, but Xbox is basically a PC, a closed architecture PC, but. Yeah, it's just kind of odd this won't go away. It's like, is this doing that well marketing-wise for them? And they're still talking about the drawer that's going to stink like chicken grease every time you turn on the console. Yeah, so they gave you some specs and just, I guess, just naming some names. They said it's got a...
How many pieces of chicken it holds? What are the specs for this thing?
Oh, they're just talking about that. There's an Asus hot swappable mini GPU, two NVMe 1 terabyte SD or solid state drives. Wow. And those will be from Seagate. So they're naming components and specs for an imaginary console that's shaped like a chicken bucket.
Yeah. Do you think this is some kind of like marketing gimmick, the way that Wendy's RPG was?
Yeah.
Because if it is, it seems like something a lot more expensive to actually produce, right, if they're actually going to do it. And
yeah. Well, if they have maybe, I don't know, because yeah, producing a cylindrical... you know, bucket-shaped console cannot be particularly cheap unless they do it big enough that it's basically just a mini tower with some plastic around it. I don't know. It seems really like a really stupid thing, and I wish it would just kind of, they would stop, you know, getting involved in everything. it's odd. So I think we'll continue to see this fast food trend of, oh yeah, hey, geek culture, remember this bad diet
you maintain? On the one hand, can you blame companies for doing it?
No, I mean, because they're feeding kind of an endless, you know, people want to see new things pop up on social media, kind of get noticed and get searched and get attention. So yeah, if they can throw this kind of nonsense in there. And it's so funny because it's like, it starts as parody. That's kind of happened, I think, with like the April Fool's jokes. Okay. Is like some Japanese companies have gotten themselves into trouble releasing like their joke toy or some mashup of something, and people are like, wow, I would really buy that. Right. And then they make it. So it's like you have to be careful. Your parodies and your satire actually just become normal life.
But again, like if people are, I guess it's not great, but from like capitalist viewpoint, if people are willing to toss the money at it.
Yeah. Then why not?
Run the numbers and say, hey, we can actually make money on this. So
we're trolling you, and you're paying us to troll you. Yeah,
really.
Yeah, so that was kind of all I had. Anything else that, this was kind of the greatest hits, like the things that I remember talking about or remember just, you know, sighing about. But yeah, I don't know. And do we have anything to be looking forward to this year? I think, well, maybe the Dark Tower is being prototyped. The Dark Tower remake game is being prototyped. So that thing is coming. So I can't wait to see that. So that's one thing I'm looking forward to as far as like, is that actually going to happen? Can they actually get that done? Because it seemed pretty ambitious. And so Restoration Games is bringing back the Dark Tower. That sounds like a good beer and pretzels evening
for us.
Sure,
it does. Yeah. Now I'm looking forward to the... Tales of Exadia and Masters of the Universe.
Oh, right.
Role-playing games, which I think have been confirmed for a 2021 release.
Cool.
Those are both primed by Cortex, which is a system I like. I've tried watching The Dragon Prince on Netflix, and...
No.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It just did not hold my attention. Mm. I got like 10 minutes into the first episode, and I'm like, there are better things for me to watch. But... I'm more excited by the fact that a game system I like has partnered with like Mattel and Netflix to like produce these two games based on wildly popular IPs. Just for the fact that let's get something out there that people recognize that's attached to like Mattel in Masters of the Universe case to kind of rival D&D, hopefully, ultimately, and the death grip WotC has with D&D.
Like,
is there another role-playing game besides D&D that you can pick up in like Walmart or something?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is currently no.
Right.
But you partner with someone like Mattel.
Yeah. And that'll
hopefully that will change.
Yeah. That's true. And it is properties. It's comic. Well, it used to be, you know, comic books or TV animation that brought you into wanting to do something fantasy. So yeah, if they have a property that people are interested in, actively interested in. Yeah. I'm curious to see, is the Dragon Prince, is that one of those cell shaded kind of CG?
Yes. Yeah. Which
I can't watch those.
It seems like I've really soured on anime. It kind of seems like a Western anime where, not that I can't decide, but you know, there's those moments of kind of like seriousness and then like something comedic will happen where I'm just like, okay, pick a tone, right? And it does kind of have that cell shaded thing, which is totally fine. Kind of came off as diff.
Yeah, yeah.
From what I was watching. So yeah. I am by no means trying to throw it under the bus. I know a lot of people like it. It's right. just, it wasn't for me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Well, one thing, though, that did come out of 2020 that I was very happy about, or it was kind of my coping mechanism, basically, is the Mutant Chronicles lore series. Yeah, so that started when I'm like, wait, I can't leave the house? Okay, so, and I took a look at my shelf. I was like, oh, I have all the print books of the third edition Mutant Chronicles. Let's read some of those.
So, and Chronopia is coming when?
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. No, I was just thinking about that's the next thing I'm going to try to do is, yeah, because... That was, I think, even more so than Mutant Chronicles. That was like, wow, I love that. I love that take on fantasy. And yeah, so definitely because there's not as much material in English, in Swedish, there's a whole world. It's a whole D&D setting, basically, in Swedish. But in English, it's a lot less. So it might not be as expansive a series, but it would be really fun to talk about the different factions and the kind of the situation in the world.
It was just what? Like the core book? Maybe there was a second edition core book in English, and then what, like three expansions?
Mm-hmm.
I think like Sons of Kronos, then like the Abyss, and something else. So I remember one Christmas when it kind of came out, wrapped something up for my brother, and unwrapped it, and it was like, why did you wrap up the Chronopia core book? I'm like, no, there's three other parts that go with it. This is just kind of, and realizing now that's kind of like a bad idea. But anyway, no, we had all those books, and that was a really cool setting that was just kind of different enough to go, wow, okay, this is cool.
Oh, the Dwarven Labyrinth.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, Dwarven Labyrinth, like Stygians, and yeah, Sons of Kronos. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that'll definitely be the next project, because that would be fun, a fun kind of change from, kind of future diesel punk to fantasy. Yeah, so I definitely like to do that. And there might not be a lot of art, but... I can definitely... from what's in the books and things, it's not as, but I'm not using, it's all, so if you haven't seen that series, it's all CG art, and I use some of the illustrations from the books to kind of give that the older flavor, but it's a lot of kind of motion graphics and kind of dynamic animation. So yeah, I'll put a link to that, and that was fun to do, so I think it's worth pursuing, and we'll have to think of, like another setting. I was actually thinking, even though it hasn't gotten a lot of attention, the Forbidden Lands has a distinct setting that might be fun to kind of.
Oh, it does kind of have.
Yeah. And to kind of.
Species in there, yeah.
Right. And to, I don't think it's that accessible in the books because it's mostly in the GM's book. Okay. And so maybe the players won't. The GM's going to be explaining that. So it might be a fun thing without spoilers to kind of go through the history of that setting if people are excited about that or have enjoyed that game. I think Forbidden Lands kind of like. How we got here, kind of what the Blood Mist is and what's going on, why we're kind of landlocked in, we're surrounded by mountains.
Because it makes for a good game.
Right. Yeah. So, so we'll see. We'll see what's next. But yeah, so that was 2020, the good and the bad.
Mostly bad?
Yeah, I don't know. And we'll see. I don't think we're headed into much better of a year. I think we're still going to have a lot of delays. There's still production delays, everyone.
Oh, you mean in terms of games and stuff?
Yeah, okay, yeah, games. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think just life quality of life in general is going to suck. Yeah.
So get that gaming in while you can, yeah.
Right. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's HiveMind, HiveMynd. I'm also still churning out Conan the Salaryman stuff on a daily basis.
Nice.
And daily synthwave recommendations
Nymphwave,
which I might have to swap over to weekdays only.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's hard for me to listen to the recommendations on Saturday and Sunday. And I like to listen to the stuff before I actually recommend it.
Right. Oh, cool. Cool. And if you want to see more of the weekly, there will be on the Patreon, on patreon.com/utteredhands, there will be a pledge level that will be for weeklings, I guess. So,
W-E-E-K?
Yeah, double E.
Okay.
So the weekling pledge level, if you do enjoy this show and would like to see more of this produced, there'll be a specific way that you can show your support.
Okay,
so
cool.
The weekling pledge.
I like that.
All right. And so visit utteredhands.com for more information and for the video and also the audio podcast subscription. And on Twitter, Idle Red Hands, as well as YouTube and Twitch.
Yep.
So that's it for this week.
Awesome.
And that's it for 2020.
Yeah,
Forget about that. The past, put it behind us. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.
Bye.